Yo, Pierre, you want to come out here?
In New York, I mainly rock. Hide it in my socks. Running from an op. And I shoot at op. And I'm on the block.
Midlife Surfer. Midlife Surfer. Podcast listener. How the heck are you? My name's Jeff. I'm a small wave lover. I'm a Craigslist scroller.
Nicorette chewer.
2013 Honda Pilot driver.
Dope city, bitch.
Yeah, man.
And an amateur podcaster. And I'm so stoked that you joined me today. This is the Midlife Surfer podcast. How the heck are you? Thank you. Here we are once more. Hey, I gotta say, thank you for all the well wishes and kind messages shared regarding the miscarriage our family experienced last month or 3 weeks ago or whatever. It feels like a long time now. My wife's doing well. Still bummed out, obviously, but we're doing much better. And I read to her every single message from you guys. A handful of you have gone through similar experiences, and I obviously know we're not the only ones that have dealt with this. So I just want to thank you for that. Like I said, I wasn't going to mention it at all. My wife said, you know, you got listeners, and they're your friends, and they're getting to know you. I think it'd be worthwhile to share it on the pod. So I did, and I don't regret that I did. So thank you for that. I'm blessed to have friends like you guys out there listening and engaging with the podcast. Thanks again. Okay, I want to remind you, oh, by the way, if you go to uroko.com, it's another way to enter this raffle that we have going until episode 60. This is going to publish on April 29th, a Friday, and you have the 29th and the 30th of April before the month expires to go to uroko.com. Make a purchase, buy yourself a kick-ass t-shirt, a hat, beanie. Alex Check has a lot of beautiful gear online there. Use Midlife Surfer, promo code Midlife Surfer. You get 10% off your purchase, and a $5 donation is kicked back to me and Adam Montiel.
Yeah, man.
To help fund our podcast. We're going to improve our equipment one of these days. Also, I just like kicking him some bucks for his time because he edits this and makes me sound decent and adds the reggae horns, as you well know. So you also enter a drawing, right? So if you make a purchase at uroko.com, Midlife Surfer is the promo code, 10 off, and then also a $5 donation to the podcast, and your name is entered into a drawing or a raffle? I don't know the difference. I kind of use those terms interchangeably. But anyway, I'm going to take my my Giants hat circa 2007. I bought it the year that Tim Lincecum made his debut. It's weathered. It's war-torn. It has three championships under its belt. I have a pinhead. I have like a 7 1/8 size hat. And you know, like when you get those new era hats, at least the old school ones, like they look like freaking top hats on your head. So I tore out the front part. Like if you open on the back side of the hat, there's that white mesh. I cut that out years ago and it helps the hat sit comfortably on my head. It also makes for a good raffle bucket. I take your name, I put it on an Excel sheet, I chop it up in equal size pieces. And then I'm going to do an old school raffle with the great Alex Check of Uroko on episode 60. And the winner is going to get $200 in free Uroko gear. U-R-O-K-O is Uroko's website. If you don't want to make a purchase on Uroko.com, but you still want to enter the raffle, you can go to MidlifeSurfer.com and make a donation to the pod. Every $5 donation earns you a raffle ticket. So if you give me 20 bucks, then you got 4 raffle tickets in the mix. And I have a couple of new donations and some shout outs I want to make. Patricia, she bought me more 10. If you go to buy, it's midlifesurfer.com. You click buy me a coffee. And then it says you bought the Midlife Surfer podcast X amount of. And then I'm supposed to enter what, you know, what the item is. So I just wrote podcast gears. So she brought me 10 podcast gears. AKA she donated 10 bucks and she wrote, hi again. I heard one of your episodes that only one lady has ever donated. Patricia, that has since changed. We have received a donation from the great Lisa. So thank you for that. You are the second now, but you were the first. That couldn't have been just me. So I thought to represent the ladies even more. Hope you get some new good tech for your podcast. Also, this is just a dream, but I love if you could interview Wingnut since he's a local. By local, of course, we're talking Santa Cruz, California. Thank you for all your great content. Well, thank you, Patricia. You are easily impressed by this great content, but I appreciate you. Wingnut Weaver, Robert Wingnut Weaver. He's a legendary longboarder around here. And I haven't even thought about reaching out to him. He was also in Endless Summer 2, I want to say circa 1995-ish. And he would be probably be a good interview. I think he travels the world doing surf coaching for really rich people. Another legendary longboarder is forthcoming on this pod. You've heard him before if you're a loyal listener. Michel Junot, certainly I've spoken about his boards a million times. And I love his boards, I love his shapes, and even better is the person. Michel's a great guy, and I think you'll enjoy this meandering conversation. He carved out an hour or so for me, and he's just so gracious and cool, so I think you'll enjoy that. But before then, I want to continue with the donation shout-outs. Tyler, you made an order via Oroco, and thus, you used the Midlife Surfer podcast, and like I said, thus, you got a raffle ticket and a $5 donation to the pod. Also, Mancuso, you did the same thing on Oroco.com, so thank you for that. Cousin Mike bought 20 podcast gears for us, $20. He writes, cheers, Broham, love listening to the pod. Thank you, Cousin Mike, you the man. And then Mike D., I believe you're out of Colorado. You also donated 10 bucks, so God bless you, and thank you for that. Let's get to this podcast. We are at the podcast. Let's get to this darn interview. Michel Junot, legendary shaper. Check out his website, surfboardsbymichelljunot.com. I've talked about him enough. I know that a handful of customers, or rather listeners, have emailed me and said, hey, I ended up getting a custom made by Michel Junot based on your recommendation. So that's pretty cool. Maybe one of you listeners will hear this and also be compelled to support your local shaper. And if you're not in the Santa Cruz area, just support Santa Cruz's local shaper, because you couldn't be handing your dollars to a better guy. I've said it a million times, and look, I've surfed some Channel Islands and some Lost boards, and those are great companies and great brands, but there is just something to be said for buying locally in many different areas of your life, and specifically when you're getting a handshape from someone like Michelle. He's going to talk to you about what waves you surf, how you surf. Maybe if you've got a handful of boards from the person, he or she will know, you know, your trajectory and your surfing journey and help you come up with a nice board that'll fit your needs with what you're looking for. Michelle's done just that. On top of that, he's a legendary longboarder. He's competed in the Duct Tape Invitational. When I was talking to him, I saw a plaque on the wall. He was a champion of some 2004 national, you know, Malibu nose riding competition. Just a kick-ass longboarder. And if you searched him, you could certainly find his surfing. And if you're into surf films, The Present by Thomas Campbell came out in 2009. Thomas Campbell also produced The Sprout, The Seedling, just really, really pretty surf films. I don't watch too many surf movies, but this was one of my favorites. I remember years ago, me and my buddy Geldy in his living room watching the DVD. Do you have a DVD player, by the way? I don't even have a damn DVD player. I guess I have one on my laptop. But anyway, I think you could digitally download it too. But we watched the DVD, specifically Michelle's part. He's surfing West Africa. He's on some sort of mid-length single fin, like a shortboard single fin. And the offshores are howling. And I am biased, but it is my favorite part of the movie. So anyway, let's get to it. The great Michel Junot, the nose riding maestro and shaper extraordinaire. Enjoy.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah, so.
How old are you?
I'm 73.
73. How do you stay in shape? You're obviously pretty fit.
I eat well.
Yeah.
I'm doing some exercises when I'm in Arizona. I finally, because I have this thing called Silver Sneakers, which is a free Social Security pass to a gym.
Great.
And there's a 24-hour gym. You just have a card to get in, right? Yeah. Literally from here to the Safeway close
right.
to my house.
Right. Great.
Yeah, so that's good. So I'm doing that. And but the best thing for me is just surfing.
Yeah.
And I surfed the other day, and remember I told you my neck got pinched and I was out of it. I couldn't really surf for 5 or 6 months. And now it feels normal again. Mm. You know, I could be a little stronger. But I tell people, don't quit.
Right.
Don't quit surfing. Because if you quit for a long enough period, you know, a year, all your muscles atrophy, and then you can't catch a wave, even on a giant board.
Right.
You know, unless you say, okay, I'm going to hit this, I'm going
to
do it.
I find when I fall out, like, my goal is to surf 1 to 2 times a week, you know, one and a half times a week's an average. Yeah. I tend to meet it, which is nice. I went surfing this morning, too.
Oh, nice.
Had a lot of fun.
Where'd you go?
Capitola.
Oh.
I surfed your egg. A big fat 8-0 egg.
There are waves. I looked at it.
There are waves. Yeah, there are waves. It was interesting direction. I don't know if the direction wasn't
comporting perfectly with
Capitola.
It's
got a lump in it too.
Yeah.
The ocean has a lump in it.
And so. That main peak, you know, it's a nice big drop and then it kind of fattens out, yeah. Which is where you want to switch, you know, I wish you kind of had a, like the nose rider just kind of keep going straight. Then you finally turn down the line. But that
went to privates.
Yeah. Tide was high though.
Oh, was it?
I just paddled out at like sunrise, 5:50.
Oh, okay.
So privates works better at a lower
tide.
Yeah,
it does. It's got to be bigger. So.
Yeah. I had a wave. I'll show it to you on my phone. At the hook, we talked about it via email. I'm recording, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
And I'm just getting more, I've been serving 9 years, right? So I'm very much a lot to learn and just simple, epiphanies have come, you know, like staying in the pocket, you know, like, you know, instead of catching it, just racing down the line. Like pointing your nose back to the beach, taking that drop, feeling that speed, going back up, letting it catch you.
Yep.
And I just got in this groove with that 8.0. I was surfing shorter boards, that speed seed, which I've had some, I love your speed seed.
Okay.
That's probably my first short board. That's it. But I just really been bonding well with it. And I had, I don't know, I probably sound kooky talking about it, but appreciate it.
Please do.
Yeah. Just angling, like, especially at the hook, you know, once you catch it, just angling it, taking your time, more time than you think, you know, to take off. You don't have to rush it,
yeah.
You know, just like trying to breathe through it. And then, you know, as you glide, you just automatically get to your feet. You know when the spot
is.
And then taking the high line, then taking my drop, pumping up. I remember, you know, in my head, I'm going 12 o'clock, but up. And another surfer's come, I dodged him, went back down, took another, and did like three top to bottoms. And it was about head high wave. I waited all, I was only out there for about a half hour and it just came to me. I wasn't in a great mood. I was kind of in a morose, kind of mellow mood. I didn't want to paddle battle and shit. So I just waited.
Yeah.
And it came right to me and the skies cleared. And then I, about three nice turns and then it just took me right on in. And I was like, that's it. I'm gonna end the day on that one. So.
Very cool. Yeah, no, that's the magic feeling is when that, you know, in it to me, I don't have to even think anymore. But when you finally get to that muscle memory place where you take off on a wave and you know what to do as you drop in, you know, you're seeing how lined up it is and whether it's a high turn and just go like that, or it's a go down and come off and then go like that and then go like that.
Right.
Because every wave's different.
Right.
But what we have here mostly, especially south swells, is, you know, if you hesitate, you're done.
Mm.
I mean, it just goes down from second bowl.
Yeah.
Even second peak, same thing.
Yep.
Same thing with sharks, you know, wintertime with privates. It just goes. And so I'm always looking, okay, how walled up is it? And a couple of days ago, there was ones, you know, where it's right here. You just poo, and you're just, it's just coming the whole way, and you can see the whole thing line up. And it's when to cut back and all that. But that's a cool experience where everything's connected like three times.
And it would connect, and when it closed out, that whitewater would be like a foot in front of me. Like I knew I was right in the, and then I would just go whoop right around the open face. And then I knew, you know. Apropos of what you're talking about, use it or lose it, right?
Yeah.
Like timing is something that I lose if I don't surf that once or twice a week.
Oh,
if I
wait
3 weeks, you know, that kind of that timing, it takes me a while to kind of get that.
So when you go on surf trips, you're totally like grooving because it just
you get a lot of timing done. And then, you know, I've been surfing the lane a little bit more, and that middle peak is a totally different, you know, to your point, how different waves. Like I want to turn and angle it and get going, like at the hook.
Yeah.
But you know, it's almost like Capitola where you need to go. I watch the other guys, how they nurse it, you know, and they're almost at, you know, they're not 90 degrees, but they're close to it.
Yeah.
And they just will nurse it.
An indicator and then it goes again.
And it goes fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't mind talking about moving your move to Prescott?
No.
By chance? Cool.
No.
So you're in Prescott, Arizona now?
I'm in Prescott, Arizona now. I live in Yavapai County, which is that central county.
Yeah.
And, in that county, there's Sedona, like 35 miles west, east of us. And then pretty much outside of where we live, there's nothing. I mean, there's a couple little, it's a place called Dewey Humboldt. We live in a little valley called Chino Valley that's 15 miles from downtown Prescott. And then we bought property in Williamson Valley, which is about 10 miles on the other side, northwest of Prescott. So there's these little areas that, if you can imagine, when, you know, Santa Cruz and Capitola were separate and there was just farmland there, that was, you know, 60, 70 years ago, or anywhere in the Santa Clara Valley where, you know, towns were separate with all the stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of what it is. And it's beautiful. It's got antelope out in these grasslands, and there's mountains around. It's kind of in a bowl, and there's, you know, snow in the mountains in the winter.
Beautiful.
And then it melts off right away, and it's a really beautiful area.
So if I you call it Prescott, is that what the locally?
Yeah, Prescott. If you say Prescott, they just say go home,
California. Yeah, exactly. Go home, Hallie. That's kind of like a
Really, but you know, it's like you're a kook, you know. So I say Prescott now because I learned right away.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Like in Boise, too. You say Boise, but everyone there says Boise.
Oh, yeah, with an S.
You kind of picked that
Boise,
up.
Yeah.
So then, so you're not shaping. Do you shape out there in Arizona?
No. I'm doing all my manufacturing here. So I live there for a month. I come back here for a month. So I just, you know, put on a different hat and go to work when I get here.
And how long have you been doing that?
We've lived there in our mobile home that we bought first. We bought some land, we're building on it. I think it's been 13 months.
Yeah, and how's it working out for you?
It's working out well. It's a little strange.
Yeah.
You know, when I go back and forth, I'm in a different culture.
Yep.
I'm in a different environment. I'm not working there. We have a great church with a bunch of great people, so we've met all kinds of cool people already.
Right.
Got a good friend there. Everybody has firearms. And so I haven't shot since I was a kid, really, with my dad hunting. So you can drive outside of town a few miles and go up in these little canyons and have your own. And we just go with friends and shoot and learning how to shoot. And
outstanding.
Stuff. Yeah. It's really cool. Yeah, it's really cool. And Jody's getting a gun. I'm getting a good gun and
outstanding.
Stuff.
Outstanding.
I have some rifles and stuff.
Yeah.
And those are some passed on from my dad and things I picked up along the way because I knew someday I was going to retire and, you know, hopefully live in the country. And that's how it's worked out.
Good for you.
It's really cool.
That's killer. And we have a shotgun, but I don't think I've even taken it out or put the barrel on. I mean, I'm such a kook around guns. I just got it just in case, you know, Armageddon, you know, FEMA camps are set up out front and maybe one happens and there's looting, you know, then I stand a chance.
You know what? I could hook you up with some friends here who belong to the Scotts Valley gun club, and they have a shooting range up there.
Yeah.
And what you want to do, you know, learn how to use it.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it costs to join, but I have some friends who do that. So we can talk about that if you want. I
appreciate
it. And what's cool is, you know, this guy is an ex-military army guy. And what's really neat is he's got this truck and it's all outfitted with sirens and flashing lights and everything. And it's a four-wheel drive vehicle. And him and a whole bunch of guys, especially ex-military guys, are kind of in with the police and being deputies for whether it's fire or whether it's, you know, search and rescue or something like that. So these guys are kind of can be deputized to come out and help out what's going on, whatever it is. Hmm. And so it's a very independent and just neat community of people. And one thing about Prescott, they have, you know, according to everybody's opinion, the best Veterans Administration hospital in the United States. Mm. There's a lot of vets that have moved there because it's cheap, it's beautiful, it's nice, and they can retire there. The air's clean, you know, the whole thing. And they have a really good VA hospital.
Yeah.
So it just, and it has the oldest rodeo in the world. So you know, it's got the Wild West.
Yeah.
Downtown Prescott is this place called Whiskey Row.
Yeah.
It's where Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp.
Really?
And all, yo, dude.
That's
yeah,
cool.
It's the real
history.
It's real history.
Real Wild West.
It's real Wild West. Yeah, and you walk into these old saloons or restaurants now and you go, oh my, I want a movie site. No, I'm at the real place.
Right.
You know, so it's very neat place. And you know, there's all this mountain biking and hiking. And so it's got a cross between government that is conservative but also takes care of the environment and has all these trails and things made, and but it you don't have to go get permits to do stuff.
Right.
There's no parking meters.
I'll be damned.
And that just is symbolic of what's going on.
Right.
Just live your life.
Probably a hell of a lot more space to park too, I reckon.
You can park at the airport for free. I mean, leave your car there when you fly. I know, we laugh because it's here you can't even
So culturally there's a dichotomy there. And then as far as, you know, your work life balance, are you how has that changed for you? I mean, coming back and grinding on shapes for a month and then you turn it off, it sounds like. And
I'm in touch with Spico here at the glass shop,
right,
so that I know where the boards are coming through, and usually they're all done by the time we come back this time, and I hand them off to pay patients to customers. Yeah. I'm used to the patient thing because my wife's a naturopath. So, so when I'm over there, I'm dealing with medical stuff.
Surfing's
with her.
Therapeutic, though. It's funny, no doubt about it.
No, it is. So yeah, it's working out. It's working out fine, you know.
And you're surfing.
I'm surfing when I'm here. Yeah.
Cool.
And then I don't know if we talked last time, but there's a place called Cannon Beach in Mesa, Arizona, down by Phoenix, that they're building a $120 million surf park with a wave machine and all the accoutrements, you know, a state-of-the-art gym, restaurants, condos, hotel. You know, they have two wave. One's one of those flowing kind of wave pools. The other one's a real wave.
Right.
So you can people can look at Cannon Beach, Arizona, and and check it out. Yeah, and it's Shane Beshen is one of the co-owners.
Oh, okay.
And so he's kind of their spokesman and the whole thing. And so he and the people who, you know, worked on the design, it's going to be a world-class wave.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
What do you think of Kelly's wave?
I haven't surfed it to show you the difference between all the, you know, I don't, I'm no engineer and I don't understand how all this works. But Kelly's wave, as I understand it, is this big wing that pushes water, and it's a tsunami wave. It's a wave that's moving through the water, and if you fall off, it takes you with it. And these guys are developing a, if you could imagine the baseball field, left field, right field, where the fleet bleachers are on, you know, center field and out and left, right field, that's the beach.
Right.
And so where home plate is, there's eight wave generators on each side. And what they do is they generate a wave, and it's all techie, of course, and it throws out a peak, and then they lay the reef out. There's a right and a left. Yeah. And the right and the left goes down, you know, the third base line and the second base line kind of, or right into, more like into left field, right field.
Right.
And then there's a channel, and then you ride it all the way and kick out, and you come back.
It's like now, the proper A-frame.
Yeah, it's a proper A-frame, exactly. And the cool thing is, Kelly's wave is once every 6 or 7 minutes.
Right, they wait for the water to settle, et cetera.
Well, this place has that all figured out, but every 30 seconds there's a wave.
Outstanding.
So there's a queue of seven people who go at once, and then you know you ride it all. It's about a 100-yard ride, and you ride it through and kick out and come back.
Yeah.
So by the time you get back, if you're paddling, you've probably only got a couple minutes, maybe less than a minute, to get ready for the next wave.
Right.
And then there's guys going and
that's
stuff.
Great.
And if you fall off and you just paddle back into the channel and come back and wait your turn.
Right.
And I met the guys that are building it, both the design engineer and the owner and then their construction team and engineers and all that stuff. It's the real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now I think maybe they've already filled the water this last week.
How interesting.
And surfed one side of it. So they built the right first. And then if there's any changes to be made that make it better before they build the other side, then they adjust that and then copy that on the left.
My only point of reference really is Kelly's wave, but I imagine as more and more of these wave pools come to fruition, the price is going to come down too, because I can't surf Kelly's wave unless you go some big $50,000 corporate event or I'm invited, which neither is going to happen for me.
Right. That's how I feel.
Curious how it's priced out there.
What they're doing is they did a real good job of PR. Of course, they had to work with the political fathers, the people there, the people in charge of everything. And people don't know, and I didn't know this till I moved there, Arizona has a lot of water. It's all underground, most of it, and they have some from the Colorado River and different stuff. But Phoenix used to be agricultural, much like, you know, what Silicon Valley used to
be. Yeah, Central Valley.
There's just Silicon Valley, just, you know, there was a lot of fruit trees and stuff.
Right.
Central Valley, too. But they have two giant aquifers under there. So they're growing citrus, they're growing alfalfa, they're growing all kinds of vegetables and stuff. And it's pretty seasonal because too hot in the summer. But these guys bought a 40-acre parcel, which was alfalfa. And then they did, of course, all the work of planning and then, you know, making sure everything was cool. And so they use way, 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 way more less water than alfalfa. Alfalfa has to use a lot of water to keep that going.
Yeah.
So they said in that environmental way, no problems whatsoever. They're bringing a business. They're bringing money.
Absolutely.
And so what they're going to have, what they already have, all the kids in the high schools can't wait. They're all talking about
it. Oh, I bet.
You know, it's not going to be overpriced because all the rest of the infrastructure there is paying for it too.
Support it, right.
So the draw is, of course, the wave. But people are going to be investing in businesses, investing in buying condos,
it's development.
Coming there. Yeah, it's development, and so if you had the money, you could go buy a condo there. If you want to put in some kind of a, you know, I don't know, an accessory store for whatever, a surf shop, you know, there's people who are going to bid on that and get those.
What city is it called?
It's actually in Gilbert. So if you go from Phoenix, you go east, the two main towns are going to be Mesa and then Gilbert. So it's kind of doing this sprawl thing that LA did or Silicon Valley did. It's moving out. But they have a beautiful freeway system. The exits are every 2 miles.
Yeah.
And it's a grid. So you never have this Capitola problem with everybody going, you know, you've got Bay Avenue right next to 41st Avenue.
Bottleneck forever.
Bottleneck, yeah. So, and they have 10 running through the middle of Phoenix, to go from LA all the way to the Midwest. And then they have two concentric freeway systems. One is on the north and one is on the south. And so if you want to go somewhere, you can go outside the actually metropolitan area, go back around and get off. Mm. Instead of be stuck in traffic, going 5 miles an hour like we do here, you can go set the 75 is the speed limit.
Yeah.
You can go 75 and it's a little bit farther, but you're going, hey, I'm moving, you know. Right. So with that design, they've got a pretty nice...
Yeah,
pretty nice metropolitan area. Yeah, it is.
It's nice when you have a blank slate like the desert too, and new developments. Yeah. Where, you know, I imagine when they're designing the streets here, they had no idea the boom of Silicon Valley and how.
Yeah, if you look at the old pictures, you got dirty, dirt street downtown Santa Cruz. Yeah. You know, and then as it grew, they just had to figure it out on the same thing with LA. That's how LA is.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. Most of LA is kind of crazy. So
I want to ask you about LA and briefly run through just your history and how you arrived here in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
But before that, I just want to ask you, you know, you move it or lose it, right? Like when you're talking about surfing. So how are you surfing when you get out now? Like, how do you feel when you're out in the water? Is it just like riding a bike all over again? Or do you have to kind of get in the groove of things? Are there certain things that you have issues with at first?
Well, I'd probably have a little different answer if I was 40.
Yeah.
And since I'm 73, when the other day I paddled out and I felt good because I was coming off that pinched nerve thing.
Yeah.
And so I felt good. I caught waves. I mean, I was happy with it.
Yeah.
I caught waves well.
You came just in time. Came back to town.
Excuse me. Yeah, I did. And I think because surfing... I've been surfing for 60 some years. No, is it? May 31st, next month will be 60 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so I remember May 31st, 62. So, excuse me again.
No worries.
The fact that surfing is a muscle memory thing, like playing a guitar, playing piano. If somebody didn't play piano for a month, but they're an accomplished piano player, I'm sure they can sit down and just play and not have to even think about it. So that's kind of how surfing is for me. And so that, I think my muscle memory and all that is going to remain until I die.
Yeah.
But one day I won't be able to get up anymore.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what happens with all these old timers. You just can't get up anymore. You're not strong enough. And so... as far as my surfing, it's not as good as it used to be, but I do fine.
You do?
Yeah, I do fine. The other day, because the waves so good, I made all my waves, except maybe I had to straighten off on one or two and kick out. But I didn't, you know, fall off and crash. And so I felt good about that.
I mean, you're a humble guy, so I wouldn't ask you to say this, but I'll say it. I mean, you're obviously a world-class surfer. I mean, I'm looking at Masters First Place USA Malibu Nose Riding Contest in 2004. And I'm sure you have plenty of contests under your belt.
Right.
Are you getting to the nose and longboarding at the same? Like, can you step and move at the same? I don't know.
I've lost a step there.
Yeah.
I'm not as good as I used to be. When you watch the young kids, if you watch the young kids in any sport.
Right.
I mean, so you go to the NBA and see this guy, Ja Morant, come in.
Yeah.
And you just go, this guy's insane.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he does crazy stuff. And so what? He's 21 years, whatever he is. Yeah. And so in 10 years from now, he's not going to be doing that anymore.
Right.
You can't throw your body down on the floor every time you go for a layup. So, you know, in any sport, you'll see, look at gymnastics. It's always these young teenage girls. There's nobody 30 in gymnastics.
Right.
So you lose your step in surfing, I think, probably in your 50s. You start to a little bit. And then your 60s and, you know, and everybody's different.
Yeah.
You know, if you get overweight... And you know, that's a real problem for surfing, because then you got to ride a giant boat.
It's a real problem with a lot of things.
Yeah.
It is.
Well, for me, you know, I'm starting to get a little compromised cognition, you know. I mean, just I can't remember everything, and I look for words sometimes, and just all that stuff. So yeah, it's a trip, but in general, you know, I don't have Alzheimer's, and I'm not getting lost. So I'm pretty stoked.
And that's outstanding.
Yeah, and when I go surfing, you know, I know the breaks, and so I can still go to Hawaii and know exactly what the waves are like, because I lived there for 14 years. Yeah. So I'm not confused about that, and so that makes it fun.
That's a fun reason to dial in on a spot or two, at least in my experience, is you really get to know the place.
Yeah.
At high tides, with a different direction swell, with no swell, with the king tide, when it's pulled way back, you know, and then you know where to take off. Like we're talking about the hook, you know, there's a spot, you know, it took me a while to learn that.
Yeah, exactly.
But you start to figure it out. Oh, there's the house lined up. Oh, it's breaking just inside of that house.
Yeah.
Right now, you know what I mean? And you kind of...
Totally. I mean, that the hook... You know, you can look up the cliff and go, wow, look at that. And then you go out there, and if you don't know where that little hole is, you know, between first and second bowl, and, you know, how it shifts sometimes, then, you know, you can be out of place.
I guess all those nuances is where the magic is. I mean, there's no 2 days are alike, you know, typically, out at a spot, right?
Right. I say that that overall, I think south swells are better in Santa Cruz than northwest swells. Some people might disagree, but because... The northwest swells have to come from out of the northwest, and they have to wrap all the way around into Monterey Bay and come then. The south swells come straight in, like straight in. So they've got a really nice wall on them, and they're the most consistent. Mm. And the period's longer, so the waves are cleaner in general. So that was our first south swell 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was really, really nice, perfect waves. Mm-hmm. And so... And I was going back to the, you know, how is your longboarding? Can you still ride the nose and do that? When you're at Malibu and it's perfect, you know, it's a lot easier than surfing a wave that has little quirks in it.
Sure.
And so then it, you know, it makes nose riding easier. It makes surfing easier.
Yeah.
It was interesting. There's a, if you go on the Instagram for Brothers Marshall Surf Shop.
Right.
They put a little thing on Instagram up there. Of me surfing that I think it was 90, could have been 93 or 94, surfing Malibu.
Right.
And, you know, and I was in my, what, 40s?
93?
Yeah.
That'd be, you'd be 31.
41.
Okay, well, you were born in 62, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you started surfing in 62.
So
got
that
it.
Would
you're
be,
13.
So it's two, yeah.
So you're in your 40s.
It's 2000, so it's almost 30 years ago. And you know, Joel Tudor, we went out that morning. It was the morning of the Oxbow Longboard World Championship.
Okay.
And so I got there super early at dark. My sister lives in Santa Monica where I grew up. And so I drove up and had my car parked. I was ready to go. And so I see Joel, we're looking at it, and it just started getting light. And he goes, wow, it's really good. Let's go out. And Joel was, I don't know, 18, 20, whatever he was. He was in the contest that day. And so we go out surfing, and... It was pretty cool. This is in a film by Chris Bystrom, an Australian filmmaker. And so he made a movie on it. Anyways, these guys grabbed it off this movie and put it on Instagram. And I get this just really, really nice wave, you know, and nose rides cutting back, turning and the whole thing. And I looked at it and go, yeah, I was a lot better then.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, but at the same time, I can still... You know, do the turns. I can do the cutbacks. Yeah. Maybe the nose rides aren't as long or whatever.
Yeah.
So you lose some things in your, you know, coordination and balance. But overall, I think it's like riding a bike. When you're riding a bike slow and it's kind of out of control, as soon as you get some speed up, then same thing with surfing. Once you get some speed up and everything's flowing along, you know, it makes it so much easier than having a, you know, having waves that are real slow or bumpy or crappy, and you're always kind of trying to recover your balance. So.
I heard Devin Hauer, who's one of my favorite surfers to watch.
Yeah, friend of mine, good guy.
Right on. He sounds like a good guy. He was giving a little tutorial on nose riding, you know, on another surf podcast. I think it was called Surf Mastery. But anyway, it's kind of, I've applied that too, you know, apropos of talking about, you know, the hook where I was in the pocket, you know, when that wave really pitches and it gets where in the past and even still to some degree, like kind of like, I feel like you get the urge to like, just hold on, you know, it's getting walled up and gnarly. He's like, that's the time typically when you need to go for it with your turn, or you know, when you notice, right, like when it gets empty like that, or you know, more hollow and stands up, that's when you got to walk for the nose. And I've found when I just, you know, turn into that thing, it is, it's pretty rewarding, you know. Where in the past I just kind of hold on and hope I just make it, you know, past it, but turning into it when it comes alive, and that's when I started, you know, you start to get that kind of speed.
Yeah, and when you watch, you know, the young guys surf, the professionals surf, what they're doing is they're taking that to the most concentrated part of the wave. So in other words, they're turning off the bottom, going up almost straight up, and what they're turning off of is that energy at the top and just really driving it, you know, and then powering back down. The guy I think that probably did that best than anybody was Andy Irons. And he just had this wherewithal and understanding of surfing, where he just turned super hard and then go up and actually turn as hard off the top of the wave as he did off the bottom. And what you're experiencing too is that turn and that turn and that turn. If you get that first turn with the pump and the speed, it's going to give you that acceleration, and then you can hit it again and get more acceleration. So riding a fast wave like a Rincon wave, or you know, privates when it's good, or sharks, you're generating more speed every time, you know, or at least keeping that speed up. If you just stand there, it depends what part of the wave is. You stand there, sometimes the wave is just the right speed for the trim, but if you notice the guys, if you notice a kid will take off on a wave and there'll be a section and he'll just go wham wham and he'll fly around the section, he gets all this extra speed.
How do they do that?
Well, it's the dynamic of the flex of the board and pushing it. You know, I tell people, do you ride skateboards? You go, you know how you pump the skateboard and it goes faster? It's probably the same thing, but one's on land, one's on water. So, you go, oh, there's a big section, and the guy just blows through it, either around it or through it or whatever. But you'll see that they'll pull all this energy out of the wave and speed up and make the section.
So, what board are you riding now? What's your go-to? What model?
I rode my 8.8 kind of pintail. It's a performance pintail kind of longboard, 8.8. It's a little smaller. I ride that if it's overhead in general, and I'm not in shape. But I have my 9.5 Ron, which is my regular old nose rider. I ride that when it's small and playful. I have a 7.6 Egg that I really like, and I haven't ridden that since my injury. So I think I'm ready to get back out and paddle that thing. Because I always tell people, if you're not catching waves, you're not having fun. So if it's you have an injury, or you know, whatever your issue is with paddling, you got to have a big enough board to catch the wave. And so that brings me to a story of 2 days ago. So there was four of us. Friends, like guys I know, one guy I don't know by name, but you know, we see each other out there, and we're surfing and just sharing waves. There's only four of us, and there was four of us, and one other guy or two would come, and they weren't part of the groove, and some were sitting a little bit inside, but we were waiting for the set waves. And this guy is, he's good, he's probably 200 pounds, and he's riding a 6.2. And the board was too small for him, and he missed a lot of waves because he couldn't get on it. And I went up and talked to him about it, and it was kind of funny because he kind of defended himself. Well, you know, I'm doing this, instead of saying, well, yeah, I do need. He goes, I have some bigger boards, but I want to get used to this one or whatever. I mean, the waves are really good, and you know, 75% of the waves the guy paddle for, he missed. And then he would drop in late and then not make the wave. You know, and so using that as an illustration, you need a board you can catch waves on. No matter what, you know, no matter how good of a surfer you are, you're not surfing, you're not catching waves. And I was talking to somebody yesterday, usually what's happening, there's a lot of guys who grew up surfing in the 90s when the boards were really thin. Big big kick and stuff. And they think they can still, you know, ride those thinner kind of boards, and they put on a little weight and they're a little older. You know, if they're 25, 30 years older, they're no longer teenagers. They need to say in their mind, okay, I need to get a little bit bigger board, not necessarily even longer, but maybe a couple inches, but a little more beef, a little more width, so that they're on their game instead of, you know, defeating the purpose of surfing, which is to catch waves and have fun.
I think there's this kind of notion that the smaller the board is, the better surfer you are, and that the goal is to get smaller in size as you progress. And I mean, on a high performance level, that makes a lot of sense. But like, right. I'll never master surfing my 8.0 egg. No, but like, I'll never master that either, right? Yeah. But I'll never master surfing my 9.10 run. Like, it's not like I'm bored with this. I've done everything there is on it. And I need to, and I turn my egg as well as when I have a 6.2 kind of fish board, I got my hands on and I catch waves and I go, but I turn about the same as I do on my 8.0 egg, like truthfully. So I'm like, why am I doing this? You know, aside from maybe beach break, I could get it out easier. You know, it's a little easier to manage in the water. I guess to your point, and the more waves you catch, the more reps you get, and the better you get at surfing, like learning the nuances of the wave, learning the nuances. So, I mean, you're not a lifelong longboarder though, right? Did you get into longboarding?
Like, that's all there was.
What's that?
That's all there was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started in 1962 and funny enough. So I was always at, you know, the smallest kid in my class.
Yeah.
You know, I only got really to 5'8". But I was, me and the kids in my class went to Catholic school. Yeah. So for 8 years, I had the same guys throughout my, same gals. Yeah. So we were always usually in the front, the taller guys in the back taking the class picture.
Right.
And all my buddies were the same size. So I started when I was 13. So I couldn't get my arm around a regular board. And all longboards were at least 9 feet. Most were 9'6" to 10 feet.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get my arm around him, so I ordered surfboards by Jacobs, 7'10" by 20 cool. inches wide.
Yeah.
So it was a long board, but miniature,
right,
that I learned to surf on. And so there was no idea of a short board or thrusters or performance right. surfing or professional surfing or anything. And so, you know, people, the main idea in surfing then was you want to make the wave. You don't want to fall off.
Right.
The whole idea was you rode the wave as long as you could to the end. That's how they judge contests. And then, of course, you had to have maneuvers and stuff.
Right.
But because we didn't have leashes, you know, you learned to hang on.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was a 10-foot wave and it closed out, you straightened off and you held on.
Yeah.
You know, so the whole thing now, and even when you watch the greatest surfers in the world, they're riding a certain kind of wave in a contest, you'll notice they'll just dive off the back of the board.
Sure.
The board will go, and there's the rocks, and they pull
it
in, coming in.
Yep.
Yeah. So there was no idea right. that surfing one day right. would be a thing where you just kicked your board right. out and fell in the water.
Right, right.
So people who were kooks were basically people who couldn't make waves, or
right.
they weren't very good surfers. And there's always, and it's not a derogatory term, there's always beginners. There's
yeah.
always people that are intermediate that aren't as good as the best guys. And that's in all sports.
Right.
You know,
right.
What's the guy's name? The NBA guy, Chuck.
Barkley. Yeah.
Okay, he loves golf. He's
right.
terrible at
yeah,
it.
He is.
He keeps trying and trying. He's
yeah.
terrible at it, you know?
Yeah.
But he doesn't give up because
no.
he likes it.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine.
Yeah.
Same
yeah.
thing with surfing. If you love surfing and you're not great, that's okay too.
That's
Go
okay.
have a good time.
Yeah.
Wingnut said something really great. The best guy out in the water is the guy having the most fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
you know, that's the reality. Really.
It sounds so corny,
fun.
But it's true.
Yeah.
And I, you know, anytime I take your longboard out or like that egg I keep referring to, and I just, for one, it's an arms race out here in the water. It's like, you know what I mean? If you want to have a chance, you better have some foam under you. And I surf just as well as on that thing, better really than anything shorter. And so it's kind of a little bit of, at least for me, from my perspective, it's like an ego thing in a way too.
That, you know, that's the one thing I don't, because I've hand-shaped, you know, 95%
yeah.
of my life, and now I do boards on CNC machines because yeah. I found these magic boards yeah. that work really well.
Yeah.
And so why change
no
something that's not broken? So when people throw leaders at me, I should probably get educated, but I do everything by length, width, and thickness.
Yeah.
And what my boards tend to be is have a little more volume overall than typical boards. A lot of people have boards that they get really thin on the ends
mm-hmm.
or really pinched in the mm-hmm. rails. And those are very hard to ride, not only to catch waves, but they're hard to ride because they're kind of sticky, a lot of them. So I've learned the boards that I love, I can just make, and I'm 145 pounds, I can make them a little bit wider and
yeah.
longer and thicker for people. And people love them.
Yeah.
And again, that whole thing, you're not having fun if you're not catching waves. And it just, it's so cool. This, we have a new worker here named Matt. And he's been riding different shortboards and stuff. And I had a board. I said, why don't you try this board out? And he goes, what about that one there? And it was a 7.2 carver.
Okay.
That I made for myself that I loved, 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 loved. And that's the one that was the prototype that took a CNC scan for that board to make all the rest of them.
Right.
So he goes, let me try that one. So I go, okay, go try it out. He goes, oh, I got to buy this board. I go, yeah, I'll sell it to you. No problem. You know, so that's the only board he rides.
Yeah.
And so he's so stoked, and I think he's been surfing 2 or 3 years. He's from Chicago.
Yeah.
So he's getting better all the time.
I bet.
And he's going, that's the only board I ride. So yeah, why?
Pretty versatile.
Because he's catching more waves and it works really well.
Yeah.
And so if he's probably in his mid-20s. So if somebody's in their mid-20s, it's a little harder to start surfing than if you're 15.
Yeah.
And so if he's got smaller boards and he's struggling already, then he makes this huge step of catching more waves and surfing more. Then he's young enough to want to go back to those later for certain situations.
Right, right.
So that's why we have this word called the quiver, because if you're an avid surfer, you want a few different boards for different conditions.
No doubt. Yeah, I have your 8.0 egg, and then you made a 7.0 speed seed, which is 21.5 and 2 7/8, and I really, really like that board.
And for you, that's a real short board.
Pretty much.
Because you're tall.
Yeah.
So, you know, some people say, well, if it's 7 foot, it's a mid-length.
Sure.
You know, I think it's a short board.
Who cares?
No,
yeah,
fine.
Really.
Yeah.
And I've surfed it at 26th, you know, on a big day.
Punchy wave.
A very punchy wave. And it was, I've tried to paddle out on a 5 to 6 foot day at 26th, and my ass handed it to me. I was shaking, walking back up those stairs, so humbled. But this was I don't know. I guess you're supposed to be humble about wave size, but they were massive for my taste. They were 7, 8 feet, but they were kind of soft and big and wally.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean? And I got in on a couple. In fact, my best one, I found a right off the steps, and I tried over and over. I'd get in on it going, and I get so excited to like do a turn. I just bury my rail or, you know, just eat it. And finally, the third time, I was like, I'm going to take my time, stay low, and let it come to me. And finally, I had another experience on that thing. And in fact, I did that kind of the leap out of it, you know, kicked out
at
before
end.
I closed out, the Superman. And it was a huge Superman. And then I felt the sweet release of my leash go, whoop, and it just took my board all the way into the beach. And it was just waiting for me on the sand.
Did it break?
No, it was perfectly on the, it was a beautiful, it just
sat
there.
No, but I mean, did the leash break?
No, just the cuff
came off. Wow.
So I just body surfed these big ass waves in. But
fact that you were going high in the air meant you were going really fast.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the last kick out is woo.
So
yeah, that's cool.
Tell me the difference between a speed seed design and an egg design, for example.
So, you know, I look at a lot of surfboards, and I don't go around and study them, but I just basically see them all the time. Pat Sims here is a ding repair place.
Yeah.
You know, and we have boards, and there's other shapers that get their boards glassed here. So I'm always looking at surfboards and critiquing them, because it's like anybody in any business. If you want to be on top of your game, you're critiquing what other, if it's shoes or if it's clothing or, you know, if it's, you know, lawnmowers, I don't know, whatever it is. And you're trying to get a better product.
Right.
So how my boards are built tend to have less rocker, especially in the torso area, than a lot of boards.
Mm.
A little less kick in the nose in general, and sometimes a little bit more in the tail. But what I want to have, whether it's a log, a Ron, or a Nowski, or whether it's a mid-length, you know, carver, whether it's a performance longboard, or whether it's a speed seed, or I have a 3, 4, 5 fish, I want to have where I first stand up, where the surfer first stands up, to be in the cockpit, to be right where the board works best, where it turns best. So if you catch a wave, because the rocker's right for that, and boards with less rocker overall, especially in the middle area where your torso is, that's where you get your paddling speed.
Yeah.
If that works well for you, and then when you stand up and you're ready to go, you know, that's, I think, the most important thing. The board goes fast. The board turns well. It's maneuverable. If it's a nose rider, it rides the nose, but it still turns. There's some guys who make nose riders, and they're huge, wide things, and they're made for nose riding, and people just run up to the nose and never get off.
Right.
It's not a turning board.
Right.
you know, and that's fine.
Yeah.
You know, you can make a specialty board, like a board for Mavericks, specialty board,
right?
Big waves.
Right.
You're going to fall out of the sky with your hair on fire
yeah.
and hope you make it.
Yeah.
And so, but then again, it has to have paddling issues so you can catch a wave and not either not get in or get pitched.
Right.
And at the same time, when you go for that turn, it's going to really do it.
Right.
So surfing's not rocket science, you know, whether it's 25-foot Mavericks or it's, you know, 2-foot Pleasure Point or 2-foot Jacks or 2-foot Malibu, you want that board to work well in those kind of waves.
Yeah.
And again, back to this whole catching waves thing. So my boards have that same idea of how the rockers put into it.
So would your your egg and your speed seat, for instance, generally be the same rocker outline?
Maybe a little different, but the same way the rockers put in
right.
it. In other words, that kick in the tail. So what happened in transition, this is really important historical thing in surfboard design. So in 1968, surfboards went from long to short.
Yep.
And they did it overnight. And, you know, figuratively, because there was a guy, Bob English, in San Diego, and I rode the first one, and it might have been 8 feet or something, I forget. It was at Topanga Beach, where I surfed all the time, and a buddy of mine, Greg Jackson, brought it up from there. He lived there, and he knew this guy from way back. And I rode it, you know, the first time. I went, wow, that's definitely different, you know, the whole thing. And then how I transitioned into the shortboarding thing was I was down at 3M's in Baja, and I lost my 9.6 log, and it went into a jetty, and the nose broke off. So I came back, and I rounded it off a bit and fiberglassed it and started riding it that way, and it was probably, you know, 8 foot.
Yeah.
But it still paddled and everything. Maybe it was 8.6. But I could do all these more radical maneuvers.
Wow.
And that happened at the same time as these boards started getting short. So it happened so quick that Clark Foam and Walker Foam and the other foam companies weren't able to... everybody got caught off guard because all the young guys started riding these short boards.
Right.
And Phil Edwards actually quit surfing because he didn't transition. A number of people did that. Matter of fact, the majority of the surfing population did not transition to short boards.
Okay.
And it was kind of all... It wasn't a, hey, man, you have a longboard, get out of the water. It was this kind of a mental taboo that surfboards went short.
Right.
And this is it. And because it was so much... And even though the boards were kind of crappy, they were so much better than longboards as far as getting more performance-oriented in
right.
surfing. And, you know, the World Contest 1966 in San Diego, Nat Young was riding a 9.4, and that was small.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it was gradually happening, but all of a sudden it burst. The bubble burst and it happened. So what we were doing is having longboard blanks, and we wanted the kick in the nose, so we cut off the tail.
Right.
And if you go back to any transition boards in 1968, they have this giant thick rail in thick
right.
deck, and then they have this point thing in the back, and it goes down.
Right.
That's because we had to cut off the tail to keep the nose
right.
rocker in it, and then we had shorter boards, but they weren't really maneuverable because there was
right.
not enough rocker in
right.
them. So going back to why do we put rocker in the tail of a board? Because a board will just go straight.
Right.
I mean, it'll turn, but you can't go whoo.
Right.
Can't get off the top, or you can kind of get the bottom turn, and then you go straight. So we're great at Rincon, we're great at fast waves, but for beach breaks and stuff, it was a hard board to ride. And then finally, they started making some blanks, you know, whether it's Dick Brewer or whoever's making these blanks, making the plugs and
right.
making the blanks
right.
and transitioning.
Appropriate rock, yeah.
So by the time, you know, 1970 came around, we were riding pretty good surfboards, you know, and then I moved to the North Shore in 74 and we're riding better surfboards.
Right.
I mean, they kept obviously progressing to what
right,
we have today.
Right.
So it was interesting because I found it so important to have the right rocker, and everybody figured it out. But I think there's still this kind of a funny romantic movement. We got to ride stuff like they did in the 60s or 70s or whatever. And there's some boards still being made with really hardly any tail
like
rocker
to that spec
to that kind of that a little more, but almost like what it was.
Yeah.
And they go fast, but they're not maneuverable.
Right.
And there's, you know, a group of people that really do the pose kind of thing. Yeah. They're stylish and they're having a great time.
Yeah.
But the boards aren't made for, right, you know, pumping like we've been talking about.
Right.
So, yeah, there's like, there's, you know, there's a board from the North Shore that with a lightning bolt on it, shaped for a lightning bolt.
You did? And, shaped, yeah, for a lightning bolt?
Yeah, oh, lightning cool bolt, picture. Dick Brewer and Surfline Hawaii.
Oh,
and so that was a pipeline board, probably 7.2 or something.
Yeah.
And so those boards had, you know, we had pretty good rocker by then. I think that's probably 75 or 76. Pretty good rocker. Nice, you know, the rails are a little beefy, but yeah, we could ride big waves on shorter boards.
Yeah.
And, you know, for that period of time, we thought, man, this is it.
Mm.
And, you know, then thrusters came out and things and quads. And
yeah,
so what we have now is really a great time in surfing.
Yeah.
You can go out and find whatever you want. You know, what most people don't understand, they can find a custom shaper that's really going to dial that into their weight,
yeah,
their experience, what waves are going to ride. Because you go into a surf shop, and you might have, you know, all the Channel Islands in the world and, yeah, all the lost boards in the world, and it's kind of confusing what to pick out.
Yeah.
If you haven't thought through the process or an experienced surfer.
Yeah.
So I think the custom thing is still the way to go. It,
yeah,
doesn't cost any more than a regular board anyway.
No, so I think it's the ethical way to go too in, yeah, your local surf community too.
Yeah.
Find someone you support. You know, I mentioned Timber, Ryan Lynch. I've gotten a handful of boards from him too, and he's got a cool thing going on. And he's more high performance kind of based, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, just interfacing with somebody and knowing exactly where it comes from, the guy's family, just kind of, it's just a very functional art. It's very unique that,
right,
way, right? Like you can buy a baseball bat off the shelf, you know, and a bat. You just pick your ounces and your length.
Yeah, but, yeah.
And that's what I thought when I first started surfing. I thought they were just rote, you know, there's a big board, there's a little board, and there's a, you know,
yeah,
these are
like
the boards.
Tennis racket, the tennis,
yeah,
racket.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and no, it's because we, I wrote an article on this, in one of the longboard magazines probably 25 years ago about the difference between static sports and dynamic sports.
Mm.
And how I defined it is static sports are where you play on a field, or you play on a court, or you even play on a mountain, and it's not moving.
Right.
Nothing's moving. I mean, you're moving.
Right.
You know, if you watch an NBA game, I mean, everybody's moving at this fantastic speed and it's all great, but the basket doesn't move and the floor has lines,
yeah,
and it's fixed. Yeah. So when you go surfing, here you have this thing that moves, a thing with energy that's moving, and you figure out how to kind of lasso that energy,
yeah,
you know, and ride on it.
Yeah.
And so what I said in this article was, are you using that wave as just something to do, you know, these tricks and maneuvers on? And there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with 360s and aerials,
yeah,
and all this stuff. But are you using that? You come to the wave and you say, I'm going to use this wave for these maneuvers, you know, and that's what pretty much drives professional surfing,
sure,
is you're being judged on maneuvers.
Yeah.
Or are you riding that wave and you're just exploring the energy there and using it, you know, for, and it's almost instinctual once you get that muscle memory and,
yeah,
stuff, using the wave just to flow with the energy of,
right,
the wave. And both kinds of surfing are fine.
Right.
But because there's that energy there, and even the beginning surfer on his first wave feels that energy, you can feel it,
yeah,
coming from your surfboard up into your body.
Yeah.
You know, it's different than,
yeah,
any other sport. And then once you get that, like you were saying earlier, once you get that wired,
yeah,
then you're going, man, do I want to catch another one
again,
or what?
Yeah. Like I moved down to toes because it's getting a little crowded. And,
okay,
you know, I love toes. I like that spot. It's just a,
it goes, you know, pretty good.
It goes. And it kind of, it has a face on it.
Hold on, I'm busy.
I'll wrap it up in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, no problem.
But I felt that springy sensation where, like, you know, get to the, oh, here I go to the bottom. Now I'm going to load up. And you feel like you just,
yep,
jump. And it's like, boing, and puts you right at the top.
It's load up, release, load up, release.
Load up,
yeah,
release.
Exactly.
All right. I want to do rapid fire with you. I want to talk about your time in Southern California. Definitely North Shore. Maybe some other time I could pin you down on that. Because,
yeah,
I want to know more about pipeline, you know, in the 70s.
Oh, that'd be
fun.
That's
so damn cool.
Yeah, my favorite wave in the world is still Sunset Beach.
Sunset.
And I lived at back door. I lived actually in the house that Jamie Mitchell now owns. So I lived right in front of it. So, you know, and that was in the 70s when, you know, there were surfers there, yeah. but there was no crowds.
No.
You know, there wasn't people walking on the beach. There wasn't millions of cameras. I mean, there was, and it was before professional surfing really started.
So. Right. All right. Well, I'm going to contact you, I don't know, six months from now or something like that. I'll track you down.
Yeah.
All right. Quick one. Do you ride other shapers' boards?
You know, I don't. And I don't know why it's not that I'm disinterested or egotistical and everything else. I only have so much time to surf.
Yeah.
And I have over time, I can't remember the last time I guess when the when the logjam thing I surfed,
yes.
I have to ride old boards.
Okay.
You know, and I've got a Yator I ride, and different stuff. I've traded off a couple times with people,
I imagine.
Boards, let me ride that board, buy that board.
Yeah.
But in general, I don't, and that's not some kind of thing is, I think it's mostly okay. And I've let people use my board and then write in the, oh, I have, you know, go, try your board, and I'll try that one. But it's like, hey, let's trade shoes.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
12, you know, exactly.
Well, I can walk in them, but I'll be stumbling around.
Exactly.
So I kind of have this idea of, okay, I've got my boards wired and I don't have to think about it. I don't want to have to think about how to surf this board. And it was interesting. Through the time of doing the Surferama, which was what now is called the Logjam,
okay,
riding all these old boards, a bunch of guys had old boards and they wanted me to try them. How do you think it's going to... And I'd go out and some of them were so bad. And I just said, I'm wasting my time.
Yeah.
I have one I like.
You know what works.
Yeah. And so to answer that question, not often, but I'm not opposed to it.
Yeah.
Once in a while, I see a board and go, wow, that's... You know, I always thought that Takayama made really good boards. Rich Harbor made really good boards. Trying to think of some. But, you know, there were guys that made consistently really good surfboards that were mass marketed that I liked. I could just tell by looking at them that I liked them.
That was my next question, is what are some shapes that you see or brands out there that you like as well? I would guess Matt Calvani shapes would fall in line with
I'll aesthetic. Tell you something that I've told people, and... They have more different kind of boards on their website than any other manufacturer.
Yeah.
They have probably, I'm just guessing now, at least 15, maybe more logs. Then they have shorter boards, mid-range boards. Yeah. They have dozens and dozens of surfboards. And if that's their marketing thing and they're selling a bunch of them, two thumbs up. I'm glad for you. I know, Matt.
Yeah.
I was saying earlier about my boards. My boards... are a little bit fuller and a little more volume just in general, but I think they still work really well.
Yeah.
And a lot of, it's not only Bing, but a lot of the boards, in my opinion, are designed off of the very last year of longboards, which were pretty pinched. Mm. And so I find if a board is too pinched, in other words, it's got really thin rails and kind of thinner rails, even though it's a log shape, they're harder to ride.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're more foiled out, means they're more kind of sexy and foiled out. But for the average surfer, it's harder to catch waves.
Yeah.
And so I always go back to that.
Yeah.
You know, and so people, there was a guy down in San Diego, this is recently, 6 months ago, he rode one of my Nowski boards. I forget the new name. I changed the name of it.
It's like the smooth slider.
Smooth slider. Yes. There you go. The smooth slider. See, I can't remember those words.
That's all good.
It's in my head what it originally was when I shaped it. But it's called the smooth slider. And he had ridden one of those down there. He calls me up. I got to have one of these boards. And he was riding Bing boards.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying I'm a better shaper than Matt Calvani or anything. It has nothing to do with being shaping. It's just the designs I've found that are the easiest to ride and they just work great. And again, I didn't figure this all out. I didn't invent surfing or surfboards or anything else. I just kept shaping boards. And if I liked them and they got better and better, I hoped other people would. And that's kind of what's happened.
Yeah.
I think the best shapers are the guys who were really good surfers.
Yeah.
I just think that's been the case.
Yeah.
You know, I could go back into the 60s and talk about some of the guys that weren't good surfers and their boards weren't as good as the other guys.
Right, right.
You know? And so Yeager's another guy.
Yeah.
Yeager's another guy. I loved his board. So, you know, Takayama, Rich Harbour, and Yeager, those three guys, you know, really shaped nice boards. So, there's just something about riding, developing boards over a period of time when I finally got what I thought was it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to go big, like, what's the difference between, you know, 21? Why not? You've told me when I got a custom shape where you're like, yeah, 21's fine, but do 21 and a half or 22. You're not going to lose anything. Like, why not?
So
you're already in that.
Yeah.
You're already foamed up.
Yeah, you're foamed up. Yeah, you can play a little bit with it. You know, going back, because I shaped, started in 66 in the longboard era, then I shaped through the transition era when we didn't know what we were doing because the blanks were weird, like I said. And then we finally got good blanks, then we kept, you know, and I was always watching what the other, I really watched Brewer and Diffenderfer and guys on the North Shore. And just, you know, what I thought, cream of the crop.
Yeah.
And what I'm doing now with the Speed Seed and the 3-4-5 Fish have beak noses, and that's a 70s design. So I took the 70s design ideas, features, but then put them with modern bottoms and modern rocker and thinner rails, and they work so much better than those boards because we learned a lot about multi-fin boards. We learned even single fins. So the single fins, that Speed Seed you have, works really, really well, way better than the boards we built in the 70s because the rocker's better. Mm-hmm. And I made them a little wider, and you know, they're not made for 10-foot waves, but they're made, well, I don't know, they're a little wider than most single fins, especially way back. We rode, you know, 18 and a half, 19 inch wide single fins that were these little rocket ships.
Yeah.
They went fast and everything, but you know, it's better to go 20 inches. Better to go 20 and a half, 21 if you're a bigger guy.
Yeah.
But you can still really surf them hard.
Yeah.
So it's just knowing what was going on and incorporating the best out of that, but redesigning them because I've learned so much in the last, you know, 30 years about surfing and shaping.
All right, so. You got a lot of surfing under your belt. 60 years, we've learned. So this is the last question.
Yeah.
What was the most scared you've been in the water?
Actually, it was when I was probably 13 or 14.
Yeah.
And I was riding that 710 I told you about. And one of my best buddies, surf buddy, Bob Fleckenstein, his brother was a couple years older and he had a Woody.
Okay.
And so we went up the coast past Malibu to a place called Point Zero. And it's a reef break that breaks, it's just south of Seikos, Leo Carrillo.
Okay.
And no leashes and everything.
Yeah.
And it was a big south swell, it was foggy. And I think I got caught inside and lost my board.
Yeah.
And it was pounding and pounding. Yeah. And I was, you know, I was 4 foot something.
Yeah.
And to me, it was like, whoa, you know, and the set finally, you know, died down. I was able to swim and get my board, but I was freaking out.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, it was probably some of the biggest surf I'd been in at the time. You know, I grew up body surfing and all that. I was pretty good, but it was just like, it was, and I still remember that. And I'm going, wow, that was, you know, 59 years ago or something. Yeah. So I think that was the most scared I've been. Living on the North Shore, I never freaked out.
Right.
I never got a two-wave hold down.
Right, you didn't.
You know, never had one of those. Yeah, and people have them now.
Yeah.
And I rode Waimea, and I rode Pipeline
and
Sunset.
Waimea.
So the first time I surfed Sunset ever, I was a little intimidated because I read all these stories in the Surfer magazine, you know, Buzzy Trent, big wave riding is all about increments of fear and all this stuff, you know, and just this whole thing of, you know, you got to be just like, just Mr. Badass, and you got to just go out there and beat your fear and beat these waves. You know, it's sounding like this is a big monster that's going to eat me up. And the first time I surfed Sunset, I wiped out and I went, that wasn't that bad.
Right.
And I never had really a bad wipe out there.
Sometimes wiping out's a good thing. Like, at least in my experience, when I'm intimidated or nervous out there, like taking one and really eating it, and then just kind of pop and you're like, okay, I'm alive. I got it. Let's get out to the channel. Try again. It's not as bad as you think.
Yeah, and you learn the best thing to do is, you know, we weren't wearing leashes back then, is you got to get in. So I would always, unless the waves didn't land right on me, I would just go under the surface like, you know, 1 inch and just have the white water wash me in.
Yep.
Why use your energy swimming,
right. You
know, or don't swim to the channel where it takes you back out to sea and just get washed in, get your board and start over. One time it was right in Jocko's, which is a left next to Chun's, named after Jock Sutherland, the famous surfer from the 60s, really great guy, great surfer. So he lived right there, and that was his left.
Jocko's, right.
And so I got wiped out, and I got kind of spun down, almost felt like I was in a reverse, you know, kind of a drain thing going down. And when I kind of came, I was in a little channel between two rows of coral. A lot of times the coral has little grooves in it. So I was in there, and my board was on the surface, and I was down, hold on. And I was just kind of there going, okay, don't panic.
Go search the street. I'm gonna break the floor.
All right, buddy, thanks.
It's all good.
Here at the surf shop, we're doing stuff.
That's all right.
And so I just, you know, kind of got my bearings and then, you know, swam back up and there wasn't another wave. That was down there quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, trying to figure the whole thing out. And then, you know, it came up. And I don't think I had a leash.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly. But, you know, then I got up and there was no more waves. The worst thing Thank is God. You want to, you know, you're just about to hit the surface and then you hear the wave go over you. You know, and you're running out of air. So I've never had that one. So that's
good.
I've never been that scared.
All right.
Even though I've ridden, you know, 20-foot surf.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
So.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about the movie The Present, Thomas Campbell. Was that South Africa? And I got to go. And I know you do too, but just real quick, and I'm going to talk to you next time I pin you down in your office again.
Yeah.
Was that South Africa where you're on some sort of mid-length and the offshore is just nuts?
Yeah, that's West Africa. And we were at a place called the Cabo Verde Islands, 450 miles off of Dakar, Senegal.
When did you film that?
That was 2007.
Yeah, that's outstanding surfing. That's one of the best surf films I've enjoyed.
Yeah, that was a really fun
Thomas
trip.
Campbell knows how to make them. He also made The Sprout.
Yeah,
and
Seedling.
The Seedling.
He's done another one, and it's been a number of years in the making. He still isn't ready, he says, but he's got so many hats he wears. So that one, he told me, is a bit different, more eclectic and stuff.
Yeah.
So
I could talk to you for hours, but I'll let you
Thank
go.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Michelle.
All right.
It's a pleasure always, man.
Yeah.
Don't forget to unclip.
Oops.
Yeah, buddy.
Hey, thank you, Michelle. I hope to catch up with him once more. I want to talk about his pipeline, Charging Days, and maybe producing that movie, The Present, or not producing, but surfing in it. Yeah, that was fun. Sometimes I'm just, I can't believe that I was able to get this guy on the pod, and I can't believe I have as many listeners as I have. God bless you for this. Thank you. If you want to donate to the pod, midlifesurfer.com. $5 get you a raffle ticket where we're going to give away $200 in Uroco gear. It's on the next episode, so hurry up. I plan to publish episode 60 in about 2 weeks from now, so get after it. You could also go to Uroco.com. If you're listening in the month of April, you still got till the end of this month to go to Uroco.com, enter promo code MidlifeSurfer. You get 10 off your order and also a raffle ticket in that drawing. God bless you. Thank you for listening and peace.
Yeah.
You gotta have a big enough
piece. Yeah.
Hello, and I'm on the block. Yeah. In New York, I'm in New York. Yeah. Hiding in my sock. Yeah. Hiding in my sock.
Yeah. Don't.
Selling every rock.
Don't quit.
That was fun.
In New York, I'm in New York.
Don't.
Hiding in my sock.
Yep.
This is every rock.
Don't.
Running in front of cops.
Yep.
Shooting at the ops.
Don't quit.
You're not having fun if you're not catching waves.